Great. So there's no relevant financial relationships. Okay, so today I'm presenting on medication safety for limited English proficient individuals. We developed a continuing education curriculum for practicing pharmacists to sort of bridge the divide that we saw in a previous study, which I'll talk about in a second. So why language access? So in the year 2000, approximately 21 million people in the United States are considered limited English proficient. And this represented a growth rate of over 50% in a decade. In New York City, approximately one in four adults report that they don't speak English well or not at all, which is the criteria for being considered limited English proficient by the U.S. Census. And almost half of LEP New Yorkers live in homes where no one at all speaks English well. So why language access in pharmacies? Language-appropriate medication instructions are particularly important because of the significance of prescription medications for the treatment of illness. In 2002, 1.3 billion medications were prescribed. And also the serious consequences of medication errors reduce efficacy, increase adverse events, and drug resistance. And particularly important is patient responsibility in managing their own taking their own medications. If you can't understand what the directives say, you're most likely not going to take your medication properly. And the provision of oral and written medication instructions has been shown to be linked with improvements in health outcomes. So we developed a course in collaboration with St. John's University School of Pharmacy and the New York University Center for Immigrant Health. Called Enhancing Medication Safety for New Yorkers with Limited English Proficiency. And we covered topics ranging from immigrant demographics, cultural competency, English proficiency, medication safety, the legal requirements of the matter, and solutions to overcome these language barriers. We developed a course evaluation in order to measure change in knowledge and attitudes from pre and post. So we developed a 20-question survey with questions focusing on the particular demographics of the class participants, their knowledge of language barriers and immigrant health issues, experience with LEP individuals as patients, and the perceived importance of adjusting practice to serve to better serve LEP patients. So in total, we did five courses, but we only did evaluations of the last two. So there were 2 3-hour courses with an N of 27. And in total of those five courses, we had about 80 participants. So here's an overview of the course content. First, we introduced participants to a study that we conducted about 2 years ago, which showed that language-appropriate medication instructions are not available at most New York City pharmacies, and that those with the capacity to provide language services, which are mostly chain pharmacies, like Rite Aid and Walgreens, et cetera, don't actually offer these services to patients. And some of the reasons why are that there's no signage advertising the services are even available, so the patients don't know to ask. And also just in general language barriers, we know that immigrants with limited English proficiency are less likely to vocalize their needs for these services. We also went over immigrant demographics. So we talked about the various factors that contribute to one's health status before, during, and after the migration experience. Here you see that one's social class, occupation, neighborhood, environment, for example, as well as the nature of their migration experience, whether it's voluntary or forced, for example, and their immigration status or discrimination within the receiving country, all contribute to one's health status. And these are sort of, we found through the course, that these are sort of ideas that aren't really introduced into most pharmacy curricula as it is currently. So a lot of the participants had never really considered this in sort of this framework. We also went over cultural competency. For instance, acknowledging that the roles of pharmacists in different countries, especially developing countries, is very different from the role of pharmacists the role that pharmacists play here. And a lot of the participants in the class voiced that, you know, they would have patients that would come in and directly ask for pain medication or what have you that in fact needs a prescription for. Important to the participants was talking about medication safety because that gets pharmacists very excited. So we introduced several case studies that had to do with errors that have taken place due to language barriers. So case one was a Spanish-speaking mother who applied oxyconazole 1% cream to her child's rash 11 times a day because she interpreted once to be once or 11 times. Case two, a pharmacist changed the dosing of an amoxicillin prescription as prescribed, as the prescribed strength was unavailable in that pharmacy. So instead of, and there was no counseling that took place because of it, because of the change. And so instead of administering 4/5 of a teaspoonful, the child's father gave 4.5 teaspoons full of medication. And third and most poignant case is one of a pediatric seizure patient who was prescribed phenytoin suspension and given an oral syringe marked with the proper 5.8 cc dosage 3 times a day. That specified concentration was unavailable at that particular pharmacy, so the pharmacist altered the dosage accordingly. The patient's mother was not counseled as she was a Spanish speaker and there was no interpreter available. And so the mother used the syringe with the original dosage as marked by the physician, resulting in her administering 4 times the amount of prescribed medication. And especially with phenytoin, this is a serious issue because phenytoin overdose can result in coma. And these are just 3 examples. I mean, these are all documented over and over and over again. So then there are legal requirements. Because of the preliminary research that we conducted in New York City, or I shouldn't say because, we testified in front of the City Council as research advisors on a law that was actually just passed in New York State that says that all chain pharmacies at the moment are required to provide language services to their patients, and then within 5 years, all pharmacies, including independent pharmacies, will need to provide these services. So we went over some legal requirements with the pharmacists just so they were aware of these issues. So we reviewed federal, state, and HIPAA laws as they pertain to the issue. For instance, any pharmacy that accepts government dollars for Medicaid or Medicare has to abide by Title VI under civil rights law, and Title VI protects against discrimination based on national origin, and we use language as a proxy for national origin in this case. So it would actually be discriminating against federal law to not provide these services. And finally, we discuss interventions that pharmacists can use to overcome linguistic barriers, including telephonic interpretation services, signage advertising these services, multilingual dispensing software for medication labels, and formal staff training in interpretation, in medical interpretation. And this is an example of a sign. It's very easy to make. Any word processing software can do it as long as you have the fonts available. Advertising telephonic interpretation in 5 different languages that can go in the front window of the pharmacy or right at the pharmacy counter, and it really does make a difference. So, pre and post survey results. We found that 1/3 of the class participants were born in countries outside of the US, and 29% spoke languages other than English at the home. So we automatically would sort of conclude that they were relatively familiar with these issues. Almost all participants acknowledged serving limited English proficient patients, and half reported greater than 1/4 of their patients as limited English proficient. And the most common languages served were Spanish, Russian, and Chinese. So we found that before taking the class, 77% of the participants agreed to this statement that immigrants should know English, while on the post-survey, this decreased to 63%, which is a minimal reduction, but we thought that was pretty good. There was a 30% increase from pre to post in those who felt that healthcare should be available to all patients regardless of immigration status. There were quite a few participants that felt that immigrants, regardless of the legality of their residence in the country. That not all of them, I guess, had consensus that they should receive health care. And at PRE, only 55% felt that they needed to improve language services for their limited English proficient patients, and this measure on the post-test increased to 85%. So I think that a lot of the participants didn't even realize that these are issues that need to be dealt with. So our course appeared to be effective in raising awareness about language access in pharmacy settings. Enrollment was pretty low, and that had to do with a lot of reasons, including the weather on both of those classes. It was pouring rain in November of last year in New York. We found that some of the pharmacists showed up just to receive the continuing education credit. You know, they didn't see the title and say, oh, I have to be there for this. Rather, they came to get the credit. But we did find, though, that after the course, there was a lot of really interesting discussion with them, with some of the pharmacists that didn't even realize that this was an issue. Most of the pharmacists considered telephonic interpretation as the most obvious intervention to use, but unfortunately, due to the high cost of these telephone interpreter services, like Language Line, et cetera, about half the participant felt unable to make legitimate changes to their practice. So as the legal complaints and city regulations are developed and enforced, we feel that courses such as this can be used to increase awareness among the clinical and more specifically the pharmacy community. And we also feel that the discussion needs to happen with pharmacists themselves within the pharmacy associations for them to come up with their own sort of interventions or conclusions, because as the law changes, it doesn't necessarily provide them with the answers. So the answers need to come from the community directly. And because of this course, St. John's University School of Pharmacy has fully incorporated this curriculum into their first year pharmacy, the course that everyone has to take, essentially. So that's it. I'd like to acknowledge all my colleagues and everyone who helped with this, St. John's, NYU, and if anyone has any questions, I have cards.
No, actually, we're going to take questions at the end, so we'll let everybody present just to make sure that everyone has adequate time. Thank you very much.
Sure, thanks.